If you thought you were a wolf born in the human body, you were wolfkin. But you could be a ficus or a money tree or a Harry Potter yourself.
Hi, I'm Madison Malone Kircher, and you're listening to ICYMI, in case you missed it, Slate's podcast about internet culture. And you probably didn't miss it, but Rachel is obviously not here with me today, which means there's only one thing for me to talk about, and that thing is Tumblr. It only seems fair that the number of times Rachel has talked about musicals while I've been away means that, yes, I am talking about her favorite thing in her absence. We thought we would take the opportunity to share with you an interview from one of the earliest episodes of ICYMI, but one that still feels strikingly prescient today, especially given the recent mass shooting in Buffalo, New York, allegedly perpetrated by an avowed white supremacist. I'm talking about a conversation that we had with Dion Barry in April of last year. Dion is the founder of the Tumblr blog This Is White Privilege. Today, we'll be sharing an extended cut of that interview featuring a few more of his insights that we feel are even more relevant to the current conversation. After the break, Rachel and I will be back with Dion.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. It's our anniversary, so we're offering 25% off the entire store. Valid April 10th to the 14th. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online now at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you, just as you are.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true. But shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. Trust me, you've never seen a mother-son duo like this before. The show is full of wit, scandal, action, and did I mention Julianne Moore? Something this audacious and sexy as genre-bending as it gets. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
All right, we are back with our interview with Dion Barry, who, as I mentioned, is the creator of the Tumblr blog This Is White Privilege. This is a conversation Rachel and I both had with Dion in April of last year. So here's Rachel kicking things off.
First, thank you for joining us in this truly wondrous time. So I guess my first question is, when did you first join Tumblr?
Ooh, okay. So I first joined Tumblr in the year of our Lord, 2010. I was in my college dorm room with my roommate, Michael Schramm. We were doing homework and he just turned to me and he was like, you know what? We should get Tumblrs. And I was like, why? And he's like, you know, because I think it's really good for musicians and it's really like artsy and stuff like that. So we should get Tumblrs. And I was like, okay. So I signed up for my Tumblr in 2010. And yeah, that's kind of how it started.
You also said in your email that Tumblr discourse was wild. So can you tell me about your experience on Tumblr, which is kind of a lot to sum up, but we love impossible questions.
Yeah. So I guess it really starts with, you know, when I signed up in 2010, I was just starting to get into socialism as a concept. So that was just what I was putting on my Tumblr. And then that's kind of where the followers started to come in. I will say at the beginning, it was fragmented, right? There was a socialist Tumblr. There was a feminist Tumblr. There was a black people Tumblr with all these different little political sub pockets that were going on, that eventually converged into one big thing that turned into what we would all call Tumblr discourse.
So we should probably talk about your moderator era, yeah?
I remember that there was a VMAs. It may have been the VMAs in 2013. And that was the first time I saw a real convergence of the multiple different Tumblr discourse sections. I remember that night was Tyler, the Creator, winning a VMA. And that caused a big argument. And that's the very first big political argument I ever remember on Tumblr. Because the discussion was, Tyler, the Creator, is homophobic. Oh, he's also misogynist. But he's pro-black. But you can't judge black people for what they create to get out of poverty. So it was like a big thing that was going on. And that's when I first started to use that term white privilege, or when I first heard the term white privilege. And that's kind of what prompted me to start This Is White Privilege, which was the Tumblr blog that I moderated.
So I guess in your own words, can you kind of describe what you think This Is White Privilege did and what kind of gap you see it filling in the discourse?
In the discourse, I'll say that the legacy that it had was that there was a big offshoot of other This Is Blank Privilege blogs.
Mm-hmm.
I think the gap that it filled was it took a very complex topic, which was privilege, and it simplified it into these small bite-sized chunks that were easier to understand. And the kind of basis of the blog was, oh, if you're someone who doesn't believe in privilege and you say, oh, show me an example. Well, here is a million bajillion examples of how white privilege works and how it functions.
Dion, for maybe some of our listeners who weren't online in the era that was Tumblr, could you describe like a quintessential This Is White Privilege post, or your platonic ideal of a This Is White Privilege post?
Oh, yeah. The post would be a really simple text post. It would just say something like, white privilege is textbooks being written by people who speak the same dialect that you speak. Another example would be like, white privilege is every hiring manager that you meet looks like you. Little things like that. It was really almost a list of microaggressions, if you will. I tried to avoid doing big, long essays or anything like that. Just stuck with just like small everyday examples of how white privilege impacts the lives of people of color.
What was your inbox like?
My inbox was very fraught. There were a lot of people who were very angry about the blog. You know, it's Tumblr in 2013. There are rape threats and death threats, and there's racial slurs. All of that stuff was being kind of hurled at me on a pretty consistent basis. And then there was just legions coming into the inbox who wanted to submit stuff when the blog first started to take off. And I haven't looked at it in years, so I can't remember how many followers it ended up in, but you know, it was tens of thousands of followers to this blog who would submit examples of white privilege. So, I mean, looking back, I probably wouldn't put myself in that position again to, on one level, have people hurling racial slurs at me, and then on the other level, have people listing out all of the ways in which society finds me unequal. Probably not the best mentally healthy thing to expose yourself to. But, you know, when you're 23 and you're kind of drunk on the attention, it feels a lot different.
You said earlier, you kind of referred to this time as the discourse era. And I'm curious as to how you see This Is White Privilege and its function fitting into the discourse era.
So I think that there's two levels of what the discourse looked like, right? Mm-hmm. There was at the beginning when we were all just talking about feminism and racism and homophobia and misogyny and stuff like that. Then there became, once it was a simple way to explain it, and anytime you make something simpler, it has the ability to make it worse, right? It has the ability to make it not as effective. Privilege is a huge, huge, huge conversation, and I was trying to simplify it. So therefore, you had people break off into blogs like This Is Pretty Privilege, or This Is Clean Privilege was one that popped up, where people were saying that there was a oppressive structure against people who didn't shower or didn't smell good. I hope I contributed something positive to a lot of people. I know a lot of people learned about privilege for the first time through that blog, but I also wonder, you know, did I dumb down the conversation so much that I ended up having a negative impact maybe?
We're both obviously really enjoying this conversation with Dion, and don't worry, he's not going anywhere, but we do need to take just a quick break. We'll be right back.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Kaul.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hey, I see why, my guys. If you love our podcast, then consider subscribing to Slate Plus. Number one, it means you will get no ads on any Slate podcast. Number two, it means you'll be supporting not only our show, but every Slate show. And number three, I've lost count, I think we're at three, you'll get bonus segments and extra episodes of shows like Slow Burn, Amicus, Political Gab Fest, Culture Gab Fest, Mom and Dad Are Fighting, the list goes on, lots of good stuff. You'll also get unlimited reading on the Slate website, which means access to every article and every juicy, juicy advice column without ever hitting the paywall. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That's slate.com/ICYMI+. All right, we are back with Dionne Barry, the founder of the Tumblr blog, the infamous Tumblr blog, This is White Privilege. And once again, Rachel's going to take it away.
I'm kind of sensing some ambivalence about the place that This is White Privilege and the legacy that the blog has. And so why did you stop moderating it? What was kind of the breaking point?
So I think it burnt out in the sense that I became interested in other things. I heard someone describe Tumblr once as the abandoned clown factory on the other side of the internet.
That's really good.
But part of it is like I had an urge to make it transactional. I had the urge to make it into a website or to publish it into a book or something along those lines. But I think the ambivalence really comes from, I don't like dumbing down the conversation. I think that when I was 20 or 22, I felt like I knew everything. And I felt like it was so simple and it was so black and white and so easy to understand. And that if you disagree with me, that means you hate black people. And if you don't like the way I run the blog, it means that you're just a racist, period. And I was just so full of like vinegar and anger. And I just don't think that reflects the way I feel now. At 31, I feel a lot different about how to express some of that stuff than at 21. I mean, if I ever had to go back through and read probably some of the ways I spoke to people on that blog, I would probably be embarrassed. I'd probably want to go back and apologize to them.
I'm curious, actually, did you see the Times op-ed from the person who ran Your Fave is Problematic? Because it really touches on like a lot of the things that you're saying.
No, I would love to read that, because Your Fave is Problematic holds a fascinating place in the discourse too, I think.
Definitely. But what do you think of it? Tell me about that place it holds.
Yeah, so Your Fave is Problematic was great because it, great and horrible in the sense that
the internet.
Also, yes. I think that it also did a similar thing that This is White Privilege did, which was, it was a format that was so digestible and easy to understand that it taught people a lot and also dumbed the conversation down so much that it was difficult to come back from. The same person who called Tumblr the abandoned clown factory also said that Twitter sometimes threatens to reach the Tumblr event horizon. And I think that This is White Privilege and Your Fave is Problematic were part of that event horizon where the conversation got so easy that you no longer had to think to participate in any of this stuff. We weren't teaching any critical thinking. We were discouraging critical thinking. There was a time where we said that it was problematic to ask a question. And that is wild to me.
It's interesting to me that the nuance you're describing and what sounds like had a large part in you deciding to step away from moderating this Tumblr is the mantle that has been picked up and weaponized by this community online we're talking about now.
Yeah, I do think so. I think there are people, and I'll point the finger to myself, number one. I was attracted to the amount of attention and quote-unquote power And the voice that I had on 2013 to 2016 Tumblr, I was learning for the first time what my ability was to mobilize a group of people on the internet, which is now my job and what I do professionally. But there is something that will always rot what you bring to the table when part of your motivation involves the power you get from it, the serotonin shot in your brain when you can force Tyra Banks to apologize for a character she played on a fake reality show 15 years ago.
Do you kind of see a lineage between, I guess this is white privilege, but also kind of that Tumblr discourse of like 2013 and the internet today?
So
we've kind of circled around this point.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you guys do. I feel like I've been on a thing today. but I think that, no, I think there's an influence on what we were doing on Tumblr at that time frame. I don't know if it's just looking at it from my narrative scope, in the sense that I learned about a lot of the stuff for the first time on Tumblr, and then I was able to take it to other places. Now when I see a phrase on Reddit or Twitter or TikTok that I first heard on Tumblr, like, of course, I connected with Tumblr, but did Tumblr actually have a legacy on the whole internet for that? I'm not sure. I know that other social media channels did not feel, to me, to be breeding grounds for those conversations. To me, they happened on Tumblr.
I mean, I hesitate to say this, even though it's semi-true. I kind of grew up on Tumblr, in that I got on Tumblr when I was in high school, which I think is when your brain is the softest and therefore the most susceptible to a lot of this stuff. And it's been interesting seeing the way, as you've said before, the kind of raw anger you have at that age change into something different. And so I don't know if it's Tumblr specific or the fact that we all just retread the same things every 6 years on the internet, because the internet has the memory of a goldfish. But so much of what's happening right now is like so deeply familiar in a way. And I don't know if it's just because there's a new generation of people who weren't on Tumblr and therefore aren't nearly as exhausted by it, or if it's just like we're just cycling back.
So I'm a professional wrestling fan. That was my first fandom I ever had. And I think that what you're saying is a very similar thing that you might see there, where, you know, people get so angry about something they might see on their screen. And I'm not angry about it because I'm like, nah, man, we did this 7 years ago with a different wrestler. Like, it's the same thing. And there's a concept in wrestling that you can repeat the same angle or the same story or the same character every 7 years, because enough people have cycled in and out that, you know, people really don't remember or they think it's fresh. So I think that's a similar thing to what we're experiencing in our current discourse, the current mobilization of anger that we see. I don't know, maybe it's the idea that you get older, you move to the center because you've had a lot of these conversations, or you get older and you feel like the center has now shifted onto you. But it's kind of complicated to pick it out. We'll see at 41 how I feel about it.
We'll check back in 10 years. If you could go back to 2010 or the day that you decided to start This Is White Privilege, knowing everything you know now, would you still do it?
Me, with the same mindset I have now, I wouldn't. I don't want the smoke. I don't want those problems. The earlier part of my career was really trying to be a provocateur. But I think that people learned good things from those blogs. I don't think everything that we learned was bad. I just don't personally look back on that as something I'm proud of necessarily. It helped me understand how to build an online community, but I'm not necessarily proud of the way that it made me behave.
I think our last question is, how do you think This Is White Privilege would be received if you started it tomorrow?
I think that it would work extremely well on TikTok. TikTok works in small digestible bits. It's an audience of people who are primed to relearn a lot of this language and primed to redefine a lot of it. You know, if I got on the app right now and just started reading them off one by one in each video, I think many of the videos would start to blow up. Because social apps have determined that the more you can get somebody to comment and argue on your post, the more they will show it to more people. So I think it would be received well today. If it was the exact same format, I think it would be received well on Twitter. It works on Instagram. And I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing. I don't think it's a good thing that the same exact conversation in the same exact format that we had 8 years ago would basically still function the same way today. It's an exhausting thing to kind of go back and forth. When Trayvon Martin, his murderer, George Zimmerman, was found not guilty, that was a shift for me in my mindset, almost like a throw in the towel moment. Well, if we can't win this one, what can we win? If you can walk out on the street and murder a black teenager for no reason, then, you know, what are we in this for? And for a long time, that formulated as anger. And eventually it just kind of hardens into this focus on what can we actually do? How can I actually stop a black kid from being shot in the street? And my response to that is never yelling at some random person on Twitter with 100 followers who used the N-word because he heard it in a rap song. That's just not what I have the energy for anymore. I don't see the validity in mobilizing the entire social media army against relatively small stuff like that, if that makes any sense. Not that I think white people using the N-word is small. Please, no one quote me on that. Not what I'm saying, but still.
I know I said that's my last question. My actual last question, which is more of a fun question, depending on what you answer is, what is the absolute wildest take you remember seeing on Tumblr?
That the Other Kin group that was there. I don't know if you remember Other Kin.
I do.
but in case hypothetically someone on this call does not, could you describe it?
And Other Kin was a person who believed that they were a non-human of some kind. The comparison that they would use would be, you know, transgender people, you might say, oh, it's a man born in a woman's body or something like that. That's older language people used to use. That's kind of the language that Other Kin would use for an animal or a cartoon character.
A plant.
Yeah, or something like that. So if you thought you were a wolf born in a human body, you were wolf kin.
Oh, so it's like species dysphoria.
Similar. Or, but you could be a ficus or a money tree or a Harry Potter yourself. Wildest discourse I ever saw was that it was wildly inoffensive to be somebody else's kin if they had claimed it first. So if I was Batman kin, right? That means I am the only one who's allowed to be Batman. And if I encounter someone who also claims to be Batman kin, we have to figure out who posted it first on Tumblr. And it's extremely problematic for that person to claim to be a kin of a thing that is my kin. Unless we're shared spirit kins, then we're one spirit in two different bodies. So that was probably my favorite one. That's probably one where I looked at and I was like, you know, I don't know if this website's for me anymore.
I had fully blocked out Other Kin from my brain. And now I need to like go crawl in a hole somewhere because that was a wild time to be alive. This was really great. I'm so glad that we did this. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Once again, that was a conversation with Dion Barry, the founder of the Tumblr blog This Is White Privilege. All right, that's the show. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday, so please subscribe. It is the best way to make sure that you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and tell your friends about us. Seriously, please, tell your friends about us. We really appreciate it. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at @ICYMI_pod, or you can always email us, icymi@slate.com. ICYMI is produced by Daniel Schrader, Rachel Hampton, and me, Madison Malone Kircher. Alicia Montgomery is Slate's VP of Audio. See you online, Rachel Voice, or on Tumblr.